This is Dear Hallmark. Each week, I'll bring you reviews of your favorite Hallmark movies and TV shows. So grab a drink and let's see what we're getting into with this episode. Hello, everyone. My name is Dara. This is Dear Hallmark. And I am so happy that you're here with me today. And normally we're talking shop about Hallmark Channel movies. This season, it's Hallmark Channel's countdown to Christmas movies. But as you can see and or hear, I am not by myself today. I am joined by the illustrious, extravagant, iconic, beloved Mr. King Costume.
Thank you, my goodness. What a title I have to live up to.
And you do it well, sir. For those of you who don't know, could you just give them a little tidbit of some of the movies that you were a costume designer for in the Hallmark Channel universe?
Yeah, so my first and one of my favorites was Next Up Christmas. And I love every time that one's on just because so many people love it as like a rewatch. And it's cool that that was like my first one, especially since it was also Lindsay and Chandler's first one. And they're also very beloved in the Hallmark world. And then I've done Sugar Plum Twist, A Holiday Spectacular. And then majority of my work with them is this year, which at this point, they'll all be out, which is Where Are You Christmas? Mystic Christmas. A Biltmore Christmas and a Merry Scottish Christmas, kind of. With Merry Scottish, I just did Lacey and Scott.
Yes. So for those of you who don't know about Keith Costumes, we did an interview earlier in the year for Christmas in July, and he gave us all of the rundown on his experience with Holiday Spectacular. So I implore you to check out that interview because he goes into his life story a little bit. So you'll get an idea as to how he got into costume design, how he got into Hallmark Channel, and his experience with Holiday Spectacular. But for this episode, Keith, because this movie, I'm calling it right now, it's going to be a classic. It's going into the canon as a classic, up there with like Holiday Spectacular, up there with Switched for Christmas, or like it's going to be the talk of the town. I'm calling it right now. First of all, because this is Christmas, let's break the people in. Let's do an icebreaker and let's get your Christmas vibes. What is your favorite Christmas song and who is it sung by? Like, if it's a popular one, what's your favorite rendition of that song?
Oh, well, as a millennial, I do love Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You, the super festive edition with Justin Bieber. Because it is, there's like extra festive like notes in there.
Okay.
But this year, it's DJ Play That Christmas Song by Cher.
Wait a minute.
It was in, I think they used it in the Santa Summit, maybe? In one of the Hallmark movies.
Yeah.
But it's a bob.
I love that. I love that. What about your a classic Christmas song? If you had to pick like a classic Christmas song, what would be your favorite?
Probably Judy Garland's Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Ooh, I can
deep
feel
cut.
The hug and
not
the
deep cut,
right now. Oh my gosh, I know for me, and I don't know how this became a Christmas song, but it's become my favorite things. But this one is sung by Leslie Odom Jr. So the raindrops,
I don't know if I've heard it. I need
raindrops
to.
On roses and whiskers on kittens, that song, for
yeah.
Some reason it's become a Christmas song, but his rendition reminds me of the marshmallows floating on top of hot chocolate, just how frothy and buttery.
Yeah,
and
it's
cozy.
A magical song, so it makes
it's
sense.
So man, and he does it in a very, I don't want to say smooth jazz in the actual genre, but because his voice is smooth and it's a jazz song, putting those both together is super dope.
And there is something about like jazz and Christmas too.
Yes.
Like smooth jazz, like where there's like a warmth to it and like a chill. Yeah.
I totally agree. So I want to talk to you a little bit because I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge what's going on at the time that we're recording this in terms of the strike. And I want to ask you personally, like, what keeps you motivated? Because there are certain ebbs and flows in the entertainment industry. And as someone who works more so behind the scenes in this, but you have such a passion for it, how do you stay motivated to remain in the industry when things such as this happen?
I mean, it's hard to stay motivated even when things are good. I mean, I think at least once a year, I'm like, I got to do something else. I mean, Biltmore was the first one we shot this year, and it was a beast. It's a lot of work. And after that one, I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. But then I went and did three more movies.
Yep. Wait, so you shot Biltmore first, and then what did
yeah,
you...
Yeah, we shot it. So okay. I've been sitting on this for like a year, so like I'm so excited to like get it out.
Oh my gosh.
It's hard. I mean, I started in the business in New York and TV, and like that always had ebbs and flows of like a week here, 2 weeks off. Which that taught me really, you know, financially planning, because like you just don't know what's coming. But this one's really in particularly weird because my union isn't on strike. So I do support everybody and I hope they get everything they're asking for. But I do also hope that when my union goes back to the negotiating table next year, we have the solidarity that we've given them.
Yeah.
Because this has been very hard on members of IATSE, as well as the Producers Guild and the Directors Guild. Like, there's so many other unions that go into it too. The actors are such a key part, but I think everybody's a key part. Yeah, I mean, I'm also, there's a lot of people on strike right now. I hope there's like a turn in labor in general in this country.
Yeah, yeah.
But to keep myself motivated, I mean, I'll be honest, the past couple of weeks have been rough because it's like, there's been updates and then people walk away from the table. And of course, it's all these people in power that like aren't like paycheck to paycheck kind of thing. I text my producers all the time and I'm like, do we have things on deck, like assuming there's a deal, and like I know there's things in the future, and then I've just been trying to use the time to like get myself great and focus on things that I want to focus on while I have the time, so that when I get back to work, like I want to buy a house and this and that, so I'm kind of getting all my things in order personally, so that once I get back to work I can like execute. Even though there's no time, because hopefully we're doing 20 movies at once.
Yeah, that's what I'm nervous about for y'all, is when, you know, it's go time. I feel like it's gonna be an explosion of
building. Maybe not. I mean, it depends on how much monetarily these deals are gonna consume, because they're gonna have to redo all the budgets, and if things cost an astronomical amount, they might just scrap it. Like, who knows?
Oh, wow. I never considered that. Wow. Interesting.
Because, like, I know, like, all these movies before, like, months and months before they're made, and they're, like, people put bids in on them, and, like, say you're making it for $3 million, but then people are expecting it to be made for three, but then with these new deals, it might be 3.5. Well, maybe someone doesn't have that money, or maybe you need another investor. It's it comes down to the business side of it, which I always point out. There's so much in like the business side of it, and so much in like, which that's another thing too, which we can talk about with Biltmore too, is I was thinking about it the other day, the amount of like labor differences and like the cost of labor on a normal movie versus a period movie are like crazy. And how in business, labor is always your number one cost. It's just like things that when we look at movies, we just don't think about.
But it's so funny, because having conversations with people like yourself who are in like boots on the ground, really involved in the making of these movies, I'm now able to look at it with a different lens as I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh, I wonder what that fitting process was like for that coat, like how many times did they have to, like I think now like some of that stuff flows through my head as I'm watching a movie. But let's go into A Biltmore Christmas, and let's start at the beginning when you got the call that you were going to be on the movie. What was that like for you? Like, let's start right there.
So I had missed a call from Dustin, who's our executive producer, and also he's directed a bunch. He's directed like Next Stop Christmas. He directed Mary Scottish, Where Are You for Christmas? But he executive produced Spectacular as well as Biltmore. So he called me, I think, end of October, maybe beginning of November last year. And I called him back right away, and he was like, "You can't tell anybody." And basically, after the production company and Putch, the director, I was the first person hired, which I'm honored. And he didn't tell me really much because he couldn't, but he told me dates so I didn't book something. He's like, tell your team, like, don't take anything because, like, we want you guys. And then I think a couple weeks later, I finally got a script. And I mean, what's also weird about Biltmore, too, is like my brother interned there when, like, he was in college. So, like, I had visited there when I was 16. So, like, this was like a weird full circle thing.
Yeah.
And it was also kind of cool because I was kind of familiar with like the property in the house.
Yeah.
And then I got the script. I had known it was time travel and period, but I didn't know until I got the script like exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just a dream. I mean, 40s, movie stars, Hollywood. I mean, the Biltmore, you can't like literally, like you can't buy that production value.
Yeah.
You just can't. I mean, even if like you had like a $300 million budget, like most of that stuff's going to be special effects and like some sets. Mm. But like, I mean, I can't even imagine what that house is worth. And it is like another character in this. So yeah. Mm. And then I started prepping it. I mean, the other thing too is like, I know I've heard other podcasts and stuff talk about it. Like, again, the prep times on these are like 3 weeks and we shoot them in 3 weeks. Just because it's a period movie, we like don't get any extra time. So, but with the holiday, I usually get like 2.5 weeks just because I'm like waiting on casting and stuff. I'm super, super passionate and excited. So like once I get the script, like I start doing mood boards and stuff. But so that way, like once I start on the clock, I can like be like boots on the ground running.
Yeah.
But I prepped in New York City in December of last year for like 2 weeks. Which is like the craziest time in New York City,
right?
And we're
right.
like throwing bats at like 40s things, and they're like falling on the street, and we're like pushing it into the freight elevator, and then there's like New Yorkers like helping us pick it up, and we were like, oh yeah, this is a disaster.
That sounds like a movie in and of itself. That's
it is. I mean, making a movie in New York City is like a movie. And also this freight elevator was crazy because you had to go in, to go down, to go over, to go up, and it was like, oh. But yeah, so basically those 2 weeks was just getting as much in our hands as we could, because we knew it was going to be big. Numbers wise, it wasn't as big as Spectacular. Like Spectacular had like 750 background. This had much more manageable, like 300, 350.
Wow.
And also the other thing about this is like we had the movie crew that like repeated and stuff. So like it was more familiar faces. So you're giving them just like a slight variation of an outfit, or mm-hmm. you can use the same shoes. Those things like really, really help. I'm kind of going on a tangent here, but basically it started with a phone call.
Oh, I love it. Cause I'm gonna get into yeah. all those things. And so I think I was watching our old interview back when we were talking about Holiday Spectacular, and you teased Biltmore a little bit, and you mm-hmm. talked about how you walked through the space to get a feel for it, to help it inform what it is you want to do with the fits. Is that an approach that you took to Holiday Spectacular as well, and that you take to all the movies that you're a part of?
Yeah, spaces do really inspire me, just to like the smell and the feel of like the, I don't know what the stone is that's in the floor, but like, for example, like I know if I stand on like hard floors for a long time, my bones start to hurt, but like that's a feel. And feelings are an interesting thing to convey. Also the tone of like the wood and the tone of the stone, because people are like, oh, it's brown, but there's like warm browns and there's like cool mm-hmm. browns. Same mm-hmm. with like the stone, there's warm grays and there's cool grays. Mm-hmm. Like there's tonage to it. Also I hadn't seen it I'd seen the house before because I visited my brother there years ago, but I'd never seen it at Christmas. Also, when I'm walking through the space, which I did with Spectacular too, walking around Radio City, is I imagined myself in that period's garment, because you carry yourself differently.
Yeah.
Like, and I imagine like the women's skirts on like your hips is like the 40s shape completely changes how you walk versus the 50s shape, and the skirt moves completely differently. I think about the heels, I think about all, which is the same in both movies, is all the pieces of having a hat and a glove, and if you left the house you always had a hat and a glove. And what that looked like. Also, the other thing, too, that's interesting about Biltmore is that house is a Gilded Age mansion. So it's turn of the century, 1900s. Even though we're shooting in the 40s, I wanted to kind of soak that history in, because at that point it was, I guess, I don't know if that point it was open to the public, but at that point it was like a landmark and like a known place that had been around for, you know, 50-55 years. But yeah, space is, I think it's so inspiring to be able to like sit in a space and just like let your mind run free.
Yeah.
Good, bad, and different, and just see like kind of what comes. But yeah, I mean, that it's cool, and I'm glad I went and did it. And especially just because then once I saw like which rooms we were shooting in, mm-hmm. I had that like personal element. And like, for example, like I knew I wanted Ava in a red dress because we first see it in black and white, and then when she's transported in time, it's in red. And in the actual library, not in the movie, but in the real one, well, it's the real library, there's all this red furniture. And when I was down there, I met with our set decorator, Christy, and I was like, hey, I was like, all that red furniture, I'm just not gonna be able to do this red dress. I'm gonna have to do a different color. And she's like, oh, we're getting rid of all that. So like they moved all of this like red furniture out, which actually we needed to in the movie, just because like there's so much like play and blocking that's happening in that space. The furniture would have just gotten in the way.
Yeah.
So that's like a great example of like just like the communication and the process of it, because I've worked for designers that like don't talk to other creatives, but if I didn't talk to Christy, I wouldn't have done a red dress, because I would have assumed that red furniture was there. But speaking of set decoration, the interesting thing is we had our union set decorators, but since it's like a private home, they had to work with and direct the decorating team at Biltmore to direct per their vision. So so the tree decorations and all the decorations in the house were actually put on by the Biltmore's team, but they were directed by our creative team.
Wow.
Which is not an easy undertaking.
Right. I was like, because the specificity and the detail of everything, I can imagine like hoping that they were able to consume like your vision in a proper way and then relay it well enough so that it's like, yes, that's exactly what I wanted.
Yeah. I mean, they do Christmas amazingly to begin
Absolutely.
With.
Yeah.
It's like, it was like in certain scenes, I know they wanted like the party scene, like golds and silvers, or the traditional tree. Which I'm curious if anybody noticed. The tree in the library, did you notice anything when she flips the hourglass?
Oh, no. Wait. Wait a minute. What happened?
It's a super... So when she walks into, in modern day, the library, mm-hmm. the tree's all pretty, and it's white lights, and then she flips the hourglass, and if you look in the background, the white lights become color lights, like the old ones.
Oh, no!
So that's it's super cool.
Now I'm gonna have to watch it again and look for that. That's a really cool detail. Yeah. I like stuff
like
that.
It's awesome. So because like the old lights, you know, are those like screw-in ones, and they're like bigger.
Yes. Oh wow, those, they sell those as like necklaces now, or on ugly Christmas sweaters, like the big colored lights.
Yeah, those are
talking about. Oh wow. So overall, and you mentioned this a little bit, but I would love for you to dive deeper, because you were, for Holiday Spectacular, it was the 50s. For Biltmore, it was the 40s. What would you say were the biggest differences in your preparation and your inspiration for pulling looks for the Biltmore as opposed to Holiday Spectacular?
I mean, there's certain like things that I always do, like 40s. I like, once I got the call, I was like watching all these 40s movies and 40s Christmas movies, just, like soak it all in. The big thing I learned on Spectacular was like where to spend my budget money based on like vintage clothing. So like we evolve as human beings. We're going to continue to evolve. And we've evolved since the 40s and the 50s. And sizing in those days versus now, like just the label itself is like totally different.
Yeah.
And for example, on Spectacular, I rented all these fabulous, fabulous 50s shoes. I think I used like two pairs, because feet back then were much more narrow. And now people have wider feet. So I basically was either buying recreations or like modern shoes I could make look, period. Which is, again, a massive savings. Shoes are like very expensive.
Yeah.
I also made sure we sourced more separates than we did just dresses, just because if someone's in two scenes, we could get away with using the same skirt, change the top, change the coat type of thing. All those little tricks really, really add up and save a lot of money. One great thing on Biltmore is I had all the black tuxedos for Spectacular that we saved. So that was a big savings. So you're like face. those little things.
That's a tall dude. How were you able to get the
I think his jacket I got a nicer, newer one, but the pants, okay, like I think we have. Cool. I mean, all the men, like, with that said, like all the men's shirts, even if it's something I had, I always buy those new because I like them fresh and white.
Yeah.
As I say, putting clothes through like a filmmaking process is like it's going through like a war or like a wrestling match. I mean, like the makeup on the collar, and it's been washed and bleached and steamed 40 times. Fabric has fibers in it, and it doesn't look. I mean, if we're washing it in 3 weeks, the amount of times you'd probably wash it in 3 years, I mean, it's going to show somewhere.
Yeah.
Luckily the 40s and 50s are still relatively accessible rental house-wise, as well as purchasing online. It gets really difficult when you go, like, if you're in, like, the 1800s. But I also knew I learned working in the time frame of the holidays, like communicating with people and talking about adjusting our contracts, because I like would pick stuff up in the middle of December, but like it wasn't actually being used on somebody's body until January. And they're like, oh, I won't start your contract until January. I'm like, you're a saint. and it's like, it takes a village. And also, I mean, it's luckily I know awesome people and like, they know I take care of their stuff. And also the other thing too, that's interesting about how costume rental works is when you rent a garment, you can either rent it for like a week or you can rent it on a production rental, which is 16 weeks. We shoot these for 3 weeks, and if max, I have it in my hands for 6 weeks. So I normally can kind of negotiate some kind of deal because I don't need to pay for it for an extra 10 weeks because you're going to have it back.
Right.
And a lot of people are really awesome about that. It was relatively similar. I mean, I knew I'm fortunate I had carried some stuff over from Spectacular to have as like a base, even though it was the 50s. Like jewelry and shoes can kind of translate, and like stockings and some hats, which is like a really great base to start on, because otherwise you're starting from like ground zero. And if you're desperate, like you can throw like a 1950s hat on somebody and like throw them in the back.
Now I'm curious, because you've done both Where Are You Christmas and this, was filming for black and white different between the two movies? Because the black and white nature of Biltmore, when they would always go to the movie, looked a little bit different than the black and white that we saw in Where Are You Christmas. How was that filming process or sourcing process for you in terms of clothes different between the two movies?
Well, it's different, obviously, because one's contemporary and one's period. But the period one, I knew I didn't want to use, unless it was a tuxedo, I never want to use black on camera. I never really like to use black in general because it sucks up so much light. And also, it's a holiday movie. Like, black isn't very festive, personally.
Yeah.
But Biltmore, like, I knew, like, Jack's suit, like, because he's an angel, so he doesn't change.
Yeah.
Like, I knew I wanted it to be like blue. Like, that was an example of like, some people are always like, how do you know what you want? Like, I knew exactly what I wanted. I wanted a blue that wasn't too bright and too dark because I knew it was going to be black and white. And I wanted a chalk stripe and a 40s double breasted, period. I called LA. They sent three options and I was like, boom, that's it. Done. Great. It, alter it, done. I think with Biltmore, I mean, we shot it similarly in the way like we have filters on our monitors so we can see what the black looks like. But in Biltmore, if you notice, they put a lot of like film grain on it, so it looks much more textured, so that's a big difference. Biltmore is very, it was shot much more tonally, I think, because of the space and the way like it had to be lit because of like the nature of where we were shooting. Where Are You, we actually did some camera tests which were super helpful. But I used crazier colors, and I think that was just because I had in contemporary I had much more vibrancy of colors, because vibrancy of color equals like a better tone and grayscale. The 40s were very like neutral, so it was like very hard to find color. First off, if it's real, it's faded. Second off, it was coming off of wartime, so like it wasn't a very like woo, party time. Everything was like very neutral. Where Are You was fun though, because it was like cool mixing stuff. But the other thing with Biltmore is all of those clothes had to work in color and black and white. And Where Are You, some only worked in black and white. So, and there were some looks in Where Are You when they transitioned, they had to work in black and white and color. But there was some which we marked, we did like a color coding system. Like we had one color, a tag on the bags that would be like, it works in color and black and white. One color was only black and white, and one color was both, and then one was only color. I don't know if I said that right, but it was each type of combination was displayed via a color, but in Biltmore it had to work both ways at all times.
Whoa, this is so eye-opening. This is why I appreciate talking to you. So
Isn't it
let's
like it's like the last thing you're like, and then when someone's like, oh, my shoe hurts, and I'm like, great.
Like the it's wow. First of all, thank you for sharing all this. This is really informative, and it's really cool to just see the behind the scenes process of stuff like this. Because as viewers, as we've talked about, like we don't think about this stuff sometimes. We just
Well, like
see.
one other thing on that is the background. My team and I are so proud of the background on this movie because they spent so much time in fittings, and like I would pop in and out when I was in between principal fittings and stuff, and they all looked so good. Like you can pretty much look anywhere and everybody looks like bomb. And shout out to like my team, because they were like in like 50 fittings a day. Like it was crazy. I would be like, oh, what's going on today? They're like, oh, we have 20 fittings. I'm like, 20 more? Like, aren't we done? Or they're always, because that's the other cool thing about this movie is all of those people are like local to the area. So they aren't like professional background actors. So they're all like, they really all were excited to be there, which is like really refreshing. And so they would come in for fittings at weird times because they all had like normal jobs. So like 20 fittings at like, 6:30 at night, and like 30 fittings at 9 in the morning. It was like crazy. But the thing I wanted to point out was every day my team would, every garment gets a garment bag, and we put name and your size info and what role you're playing. And some people had multiple roles in the way that they were in the film crew, so they needed like a work outfit, and then they were at the party scene, so like they would need two. And my team would pull out like, and it would be like 30 to 50 people a day at least. So it was like the party scene, I think, was 75. They'd pull out every single garment bag. They'd steam and prep everything. In the morning, the actors, background actors would come in. We'd do 5 to like 8 at a time. They'd get changed, put all of their personal things in the bag. They'd give us back the garment bag. So basically, your personal clothes are like the collateral. they would come out of the dressing room. We would finish styling them, any like nips, tucks, add a hat, add a bracelet, this and that. Then they'd send them on their way. Then the next group would come, and it would keep happening. Meanwhile, we're doing this while all of the principal cast is also getting ready. So there's like multiple, it's a big juggling act.
Keith, oh my God.
And I will look again to point out, and I'm not like, I'm just saying, like, it's the same amount of team and like the same amount of days that we have on like a Where Are You Christmas, where like you're in jeans and sweaters and like a cute top. And it's just astronomically, like even in the background, all the women were wearing like seam stockings, which was like big for the period, because like seamless stockings didn't come out until like I think 1954. So it's something that really helped sell the period. So shout out to the costume team.
Shout out to y'all. Wow. What now
The other
you?
thing too is we were getting ready 10 minutes away because the property is massive. If like if anybody listening, if you're nearby or have the chance to go, like go. It is really cool. Even just to like walk around the grounds and grab a glass of wine. It so like our base camp was like a 10-minute drive from the house. So that was another factor too, because of like getting people changed for different scenes and things like that, or sometimes people would forget like an earring in their trailer, and we're like, be there in 10. Like, you can't just like run it down the hallway.
Right.
There was a lot of factors.
Wow. So let's talk about, because I want to park right here. Let's just turn the air off and park right here on this party scene, sir. Because the first of all, Palaha suit was tailored to perfection. Chef's kiss. But thank Bethany's you. Dress. I just needed a moment of silence for that. Bethany's dress. Go. Talk about it. Where'd you get the inspiration? What is it? Who is it? I wanted it. I imagined myself in it. For 2.2 seconds, I photoshopped myself in that dress, cascading myself down those stairs. I did.
So, you know, when you get the script and like, I think it was scripted that the staircase or, you know, a lot of these movies have what we call lovingly like the Cinderella moment. Mm. And there's a couple factors that went into that dress. So there's the line where Christopher is like, you look beautiful. And she's like, thanks. Like, Ava lent me the dress. So I'm like, it's not her dress. Like, Ava gave it to her. So then I really had to dig deep into Ava and where she got this dress and why she has it. Mm. So they're walking down the stairs together. So Ava's the old Hollywood star. So I have this whole story in my head about she just did a movie in Europe. Maybe she got fired, but she still went shopping. So she's very like Joan Crawford and like a much more slick old Hollywood, a la Adrian's a great old Hollywood costume designer, like a very Adrian style gown. And that dress we added the sash to and like mm-hmm. re-kind of built the bodice. And she's much more like slick. And since she's more modern and she probably was like, oh, you can have this dress, whatever, like type of thing in my head.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, it can be a little older, maybe one. And two, I was also like, I wanted something that was very timeless.
Yes.
So I did a lot of research on like Charles James gowns, and a lot of gowns I noticed in that time period very much transcended time. Mm. I mean, until you really got to the 50s and it was like the bigger skirt, but if it was like, it was a gown. Like mm-hmm. there's certain consistencies. Like I was looking at like 1860s the other day and like, that's a corseted ball gown. There's similarities to that in like the 50s. Like it very much transcended elements. So, okay, where did it come from? So I bought that dress, I think before we had casting, and it's a Carolina Herrera dress, but it didn't look like that before. So I bought it because I liked the fabric. The fabric reminded me of like an old men's tie. Like, ooh. I just thought it was like really cool.
Yeah.
Because old men's ties were super cool and graphic and had a lot of like movement to them. And originally the front piece had those kind of like cool swoops, and I was like gonna do some weird cutout thing, but then it was like too crazy, so we just kind of just did the arch and did an underpiece. And then I had originally also I wanted to do some crazy neckline, but like, I mean, you when you get casting, I mean, you can design a dress on paper, like, and it can be great, and it could yeah. be great on one person and horrible on another person. I mean, that's yeah. why I always tell people it's all about like tailoring and stuff. So we were committed to the dress, and then I was trying to build this like top piece with this like round piece that like you saw, but like it was out of a different fabric originally, and it was a disaster. It was like a disaster. It just like, because we were in Asheville, North Carolina, like I couldn't, it's hard to find the fabric you're looking for, like no offense at the Joann Fabrics. And the Joann Fabrics has saved me many times, but it doesn't always have what you need.
Sure.
And then we had removed some of the fabric from the skirt, like in that front piece.
Yeah.
And I was like, hmm. And I literally in like 3 minutes pinned it together and pinched it. And I told my tailor, I was like, stop working. I was like, just do this. And yeah, the other thing about that dress that I was really, really passionate about was, speaking of, I mentioned before, the house is from like the Gilded Age, which was like 1890s, early 1900s. So I don't know if we really see it, maybe in the photos, but the back has a very like squared off bustle shape, which really speaks to that era, which was really important to me to keep. Mm-hmm. So that silhouette was like very interesting. And then the necklace is actually my personal necklace, which I wore to the Spectacular premiere. And that was like a cool connection. And then the fur, I've used that fur in like theater before, which I like love. And then the brooch is just like the perfect tie-in. And it's just romantic. And the warmth of the gold in the dress and the warmth in like the fur shawl, like pick up the warmth of the stone. And then also the black in the dress connects her to him. So it's all about like the color connections between the relationship, but as well as the space. And she's the only pattern, and she's the only pattern dress in the room. I know Peggy's in a pattern dress, but it's actually a suit. So she's the only pattern dress in the room. All the other dresses were selected intentionally so that she was the only pattern dress in the room.
I think this is the thought process behind it all, like thinking of the warmth of the materials within the space, because I understand connecting, to our leading man's wardrobe, but like even picking up stuff within the space that she's in. That's so awesome. That's so awesome. Do you have any other like tidbits or Easter eggs that maybe we missed that you were
There's
able to
one
get
big
in?
Easter egg.
Oh gosh, what?
I'm in the movie.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. So,
All right, so we have okay, got y'all listening. We have a list, right? Okay, so you have to find Keith costumes in the movie. You have to look at the lights in the library when she flips the hourglass. Just saying, we'll recap. We're gonna add to the list of things you need to go back and look for.
yes, please.
I am one of the sailors at the train
No.
station. And I'm the one that puts her in the car and gives her a ride. That's it. So that wasn't planned. So when I do uniforms, that's like a uniforms can add up like money-wise really, really quickly. So early on, we told casting, we were like, just tell us who you want, have the director approve it, send them over ASAP, and we're just gonna order exactly what we need. So people send their sizes. And what's awesome about the uniform people we work with in LA, like they send everything, hat, shoes, gloves, if you like, they send the whole thing. So be like, I'm Keith, I'm a 32 by 30 pant. And like they send it labeled and you can just hand it to it. It's like amazing. So we did that, and I think it was four sailors. And we got them way in advance and it was super great. Just because I like to get things in the room as soon as I can, just because schedules change based on availability and this and that. And that was like one, maybe 2 days we were off property, so it likely wasn't going to change, but anyways, just in case. And then one, like I mentioned before, like these were like local people that had jobs and stuff. So one person had dropped out, and we were like, well, we already have the costume, so can you just find somebody that fits the costume? And they couldn't find anybody that fit the costume that had the availability. So I was like, I either said it was gonna, well, the joke starter was it was gonna be Tristan, who was our production coordinator. And but of course we're so busy, it's like really hard to do. Like it's really fun and I'm glad I did it, but it's hard timing wise. So luckily that fell on the last day and I was like, I'll do it, and they were like, awesome.
Cool. And if you follow Keith Costumes on Instagram, he was also in the background in another one. Am I like, weren't you in the
You are
commercial for the
correct. And when this comes out, I am on the tour group with Lacey and Scott and A Merry Scottish Christmas. Which again seems like, oh, you're just like walk. Of course, why do I get stuck with the selfie stick? One, two. It is like, it's again, it's hard. It filming takes a long time. So I mean, that sucked up a couple hours of my day.
Yeah.
And I'm hired to be the costume designer. I'm not hired to be the sailor of the tour group.
Yeah.
But the tour group was kind of a hard thing because actually, there are two of our producers are also in that group and our transportation captain. And the reason that is because we shot in Ireland and Scotland,
Oh,
and
wow.
we needed people that were going to be in both Ireland and Scotland. So we were automatically going, so it was easier for us to do it.
Wow. So,
Yeah.
put a bow on this for us, Keith Costumes, with Biltmore Christmas. Just your overall experience, just experience with working with Hallmark and period pieces. Do you want to do more? Just put a bow on this for us.
I definitely want to do more period stuff for them. I think it's like a little a Christmas jewel box, and cozy and warm. And also, like, now, especially after Biltmore, I feel like I've really got like a good idea of like what we need, like within our restraints and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think I said before when we had chatted in July, like, I say like Biltmore is like next level. Like, I just don't think there's anything out there that looks like it. It looks like easily a $25 million film. I'm ecstatic to see like what people think about it. Like, I've been sitting on it for like a year. But I love, which I think I said before, like the notice that Costumes gets in the Hallmark world is like not like really happens anywhere else, which I know it seems crazy.
Yeah.
There's big shows out there and people are like, oh, that's cute, but they're not like, where can I get this sweater and where can I get this bag? And that's the other cool thing about period too, is I get the opportunity to do like really either find one of a kind things or make one of a kind things. And I love, it's so fun to, like, it's so fun. It's also so personal when you make something that comes from your mind and like bring it into reality, and then to have it on screen and then to have millions of people look at it. It's like a crazy weird experience, but like, it's such an honor.
Keith, thank you so much for coming into the Home of Dear Hallmark and sharing your experience with us being on a Biltmore Christmas. Kind of as in a like an added piece, I wanted to give you just space to kind of say whatever it is you want to say to the listeners, to people watching. Just, this is your moment. Whatever it is you want to say, just have at it.
I mean, I'd love to say thank you. I'd also like really like to point out that I love talking about what I do just because I love what I do and I love sharing it with people that are interested in it. But also I hope my sharing experiences can give an appreciation to like all the other creatives behind the scenes that like make these worlds, whether it's Hallmark or somewhere else, come to life. Mm-hmm. Because it does take a village. And personally, I think some of the coolest people are like behind the camera, and these worlds wouldn't exist. And I mean, if you think it takes a certain amount of people, I can promise you it takes at least double. So I always encourage people, if there's something you see on camera you like, do like some research and see like who's the mind behind that. That's what I used to do when I was coming up. And I learned a lot about different people and creative processes. And I think art's all around us if we just open our eyes.
Oh my gosh, that's a statement. Woof, that's a statement right there. So how can people find you on social media to keep up with you and your work?
I'm at Keith_costumes, mostly active on Instagram. And then I'm keithcostumes.com, which is always shifting and evolving as movies come out. And hopefully there's plenty more in the future. People message me, like I mentioned before, people message me all the time about sweaters and stuff. So if you're curious, I can help you find the exact one or something similar.
That's awesome. Well, again, thank you so much, Keith, for talking with me, for talking with us about A Biltmore Christmas. You all, if you want to find out more about Keith and his journey, again, don't forget to check out our previous chat when we focus more on a holiday spectacular earlier in July. And then all of his social media and his website, that'll be in the description box if you're watching on YouTube, and in the podcast notes if you're listening via podcast. Well, my name is Dara. His name is Keith. This is Dear Hallmark, and I will talk to you guys in the next episode. Ciao, my friends.